You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Friday edition of Game Misconduct, the earthquake edition of Game Misconduct. Don LaGreca and Anthony Pusick both survived it, and we decided in celebration, let's do a podcast. How are you, buddy? Did you survive?
Well, you know, I some people say first of many. Hopefully that's the first and only, because obviously it was scary for the 15 seconds. We're very fortunate that a 4.8 magnitude earthquake did very minimal damage, as far as we know, to the infrastructure in New York, New Jersey. Apparently it was felt as far as Boston and Philly, so hopefully everybody's okay. Definitely something different. People in California laughing at us right now at, you know, being nervous about a 4.8 magnitude earthquake. But luckily, everybody seems to be okay. And it was really in your backyard, Don. It was right there.
Yeah, very close to the epicenter of where I live. And I did feel it. I was at kickboxing, and I definitely felt it more than I've ever felt an earthquake before. The one in 2011, where the epicenter was Washington, D.C., was felt in New York, and I kind of felt a bit of a sway in the building that we were in. That's back when we were located on 2 Penn Plaza over by Madison Square Garden. But this one, I really just felt the rumble. I felt the earth shake. I was at kickboxing, and we were doing an exercise. I was actually on the floor. So I really felt it, and it was no panic, but it lasted a long time, so you knew it wasn't a truck. You knew it wasn't something that, like, hit the building. It was kind of just crazy. But everybody's okay. And my sister-in-law actually lives close to the epicenter. She said she already felt an aftershock, which they said you might not be able to feel anyway. So that's where we're at, man. The earth is moving, and some things are moving to the bottom of the Eastern Conference.
And so are the divisions in the NHL, yeah.
Oh, my God. It was a very interesting night last night. Every day it changes, like, who you think is going to be the 8 seed and make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. And the Islanders have another one of those kind of, you know, pedestrian victories, right? They come back with a couple of goals in the third period to beat Chicago the other night. Similar situation here. 2 goals to break a 2-2 tie in Columbus to win. So they've won a couple in a row, but games that they absolutely had to win. So couple that with Pittsburgh's win over Washington. And now Washington's lost a couple of games in a row here, and April has not been as kind to them as March was. So now you kind of wonder, did Washington just get hot and now they've cooled off? Or whether this is just a little blip on the radar screen. Whatever it is, they've now dropped out. So the Islanders are the last wild card spot with 83 points. Washington does have a game in hand, just a point back. Detroit's got a game in hand. They're just a point back. They're hosting the Rangers tonight. So every Islander fan is actually going to do something maybe they've never done before. And that's root hard for the Rangers. And Pittsburgh is 2 points back with the same amount of game as played as the Islanders. But Pittsburgh is at least showing you something. They've won 3 in a row, 6-2-2 in their last 10. So I ask you this, seems like every podcast, Anthony, who you got? Oh, and let's not forget Philadelphia still has that 3 seed in the Metro with 83 points. And they've played 76 games. So,
well, Don,
that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 teams for 2 spots. Who do you got?
Well, here's the thing, Don, and this is something that I never thought that I would say. I did say I think Philly was going to hold on here. You take a look at last 10, and I'm saying Tampa's in, whether they're going to be the third in the Atlantic or they're going to be number one wild card, because right now they're only 2 points back. They played one more game than Toronto, but Toronto is 5-4-1 in their last 10. Tampa's 8-1-1 in their last 10. So Tampa's playing significantly better, and you articulated it so beautifully on Wednesday that the Islanders, Capitals, Red Wings, all these teams have these flaws where, look, the Islanders are on a 3-game win streak and they look like they're going to be that team that goes on a 7-game win streak again. And that's going to, if you have a run like that right now, that's probably going to be enough to be able to tell you as a quote unquote hockey expert, where I'm just a hack, that I know what's going to happen within these last 6 games for these teams. I have no idea. Could Alex Ovechkin have a hat trick 2 games from now and the Capitals win 2 out of their next 3? Sure. Philly does not have a hard schedule. Could they just hold on here and their new goalie kind of catch fire here? I mean, it's going to be a very interesting game tonight for them, I believe they play, is it Buffalo? They play Buffalo in Buffalo.
Yes.
And they're underdogs, plus 105. So, you know, everyone anticipates Buffalo, who's been playing okay. They're 5-5 in their last 10. They've been playing okay, and they could play spoiler here. That's not an easy game. But right now, and you were so early on this, Don, saying that Pittsburgh, with the way Crosby's playing, can hang around here. 6-2-2 in their last 10 three-game win streak, they have a chance. And I like Pittsburgh's chances a heck of a lot more than Washington or Detroit if they make the playoffs to try and scare one of these teams if they make it into a wild card spot just because of the pedigree that's on that team. But the big reason why is Nedeljkovic. He's been unbelievable. You saw it
really
in the
has.
Ranger game. He's 5-1-1, I think, in his last seven. And any of the games they've lost really haven't been his fault. He's been unbelievable. And again, hot goalie play down the stretch. Lindgren's been great for the Capitals, but then you see in games that he's not great, they struggled. They've lost two straight. The Red Wings, Larkin's injury kind of hurts them. I think that stretch they had mid-season really is going to do them in. They were hanging around for so long, and then it just kind of, the bottom fell out. If I had to pick, if you're telling me to pick right now, I know I said that I thought everything was wrapped up, and I think that the teams that we had with Tampa and Detroit, I'm kind of souring on Detroit here. I think it's going to be Tampa and Pittsburgh. I don't think the Islanders are going to hold on. Because I don't trust any of these teams. But for some reason now, with the way Nedeljkovic is playing, I trust him more. And the Islanders have had questions about Sorokin. Now they have Varlamov, and they have two good goalies. It's going to be, for me, between the Islanders and the Penguins.
Wow.
For that last, all those right. last two spots. And quite frankly, you know what? I'll take it back. Maybe the Flyers don't make it, and it's the Islanders and the Penguins that make it.
Well,
that's what I'll do. Well, Islanders and Penguins make it. Flyers are out.
EJ, I thought, was very poignant when he said, well, who's going to get hot? You know, all you have to do is rattle off a few wins in a row and you change everything. You lose a couple of games in a row. That's what's happened with Washington and Pittsburgh. Washington's dropped a couple in a row. Pittsburgh's won three in a row. All of a sudden, things change. You got six games left. You know, 3 games from now, things can completely change there. So you look at the schedules, okay? Washington's at Carolina tonight. Home against Ottawa, at Detroit, at Buffalo, home against Tampa, at Boston, at Philly. That's a tough schedule. Tampa still has something to play for. Boston still has something to play for. You know, that last game against Philadelphia, you know, maybe it could be really meaningful. But you look, and the only layup I think they have, if you want to call it a layup, is the Ottawa game at home. And maybe at Buffalo, although Buffalo, you know, can be, you know, they just killed them just the other day. So that's Washington's schedule. Philadelphia's schedule is kind of a beast, too. They're at Buffalo, at Columbus, that's not bad, at Montreal. Now, if you remember, it was just last week that Montreal beat the Flyers.
Yeah, but that's three winnable. If you're a team that fancies yourself a playoff team, right. Not only are those winnable games, those are games you have to
right.
win.
Right, but it's a four-game road trip at Buffalo, at Columbus, at Montreal, at the Rangers. Then they close it out against New Jersey and Washington at home. So that's you know, the at least the last couple of games there, two of the three, and again, we'll see where the teams are by the time they get to the last game of the season.
Well, the reason, Don, I say that while you say that is not an easy schedule, everything's in front of them, right?
Oh, yeah,
like, Philly
right.
has teams that they have to beat in order to make it past those teams, and winnable games against teams they should be able to beat.
Right, and they control
that's kind of why I feel
from
like,
where
yes.
they are.
That's so where I feel like it's in their hands, but I know that Torts has been having this team play really well, and he had another winner of a press conference a couple days ago. But I don't know the way that they're playing. I mean, even with their newfound goaltender, I don't know if they're going to hold on now. Not with the way that Pittsburgh's playing, the way the Islanders seem to yeah. catch fire every now and again. I don't know.
Well, let's wait here because the schedule: Islanders, home against Nashville, home against the Rangers, home against Montreal, at the Rangers, at the Devils, home against Pittsburgh. So you're looking at these last games of the season. Washington playing Philadelphia, Islanders playing Pittsburgh. It's going to be very interesting to see those last games of the season. It could be very meaningful. Now you look at Pittsburgh's last six. This is a beast to me. At home against Tampa, at Toronto, home against Detroit, home against Boston, home against Nashville, at the Islanders. That, to me, is the toughest schedule of any of the teams that are battling for a playoff spot.
Wow.
All right?
That's tough.
Those first two right there, they're riding a three-game winning streak, so maybe they're catching the better teams at the right time because they're hot, but... home against Tampa.
Nobody's hotter than Tampa right now.
Very, very difficult. And you get those three games at home, but you know Detroit's obviously playing for something. Boston's playing for something for the President's Trophy. Maybe Nashville not. I think they're kind of locked into that first wild card, but still a good team. And then at the Islanders. So Pittsburgh's got a beast of a schedule. So there's still a little bit of hockey left to be played. Washington has seven games. Everybody else has six. But that's a lot of time. Now Detroit, before we move on, Detroit... home tonight against the Rangers, home against Buffalo, home against Washington, at Pittsburgh, at Toronto, and then a home and home to close out the season against Montreal. So Detroit doesn't have a kick coming here. I mean, they get down to the last two games of the season. They're gifted, you know, a team that's out of it in the Canadiens. So that's going to bode well for Detroit. If they can keep their head above water, they got to feel like they got 4 points in their pocket at the end of the season. The Ranger game will be interesting tonight, but then you're home against Buffalo, home against Washington, but three of your last four games are on the road, but that last one against Montreal is the last game of the season on the road. So those are the schedules of the teams. Should be fun. You mentioned John Tortorella. We talked about it on Wednesday that he went after his team, called him soft. I didn't think that was a good idea. I liked what he said after. Say, hey, listen, these guys are here. This isn't college, this isn't amateur, this isn't junior. They're here, they're professionals, and I'm just being honest. I'm being honest about my team. That's who I am. And he almost said it in a tone, Anthony, like, listen, I know that it rubs people the wrong way. I know it's probably the biggest negative about me as a coach, but that's who I am. I'm just honest with my team. I think players do respect the honesty. And if they are too soft to handle it, then they're not in the right place. So I know John's he's like Jägermeister. He's not, you know, you either love it or hate him. You either love him or hate him. He's
interesting.
He's an acquired taste.
I didn't know Jaeger was an acquired taste.
Oh, there's people that can't stand it. They think it's Robitussin, and then there's people like me that love it. I never heard anybody say, I could take it or leave it. John Torrell's the same way. You either love him or hate him. So he's kind of just, now you could argue, Anthony, that, well, you hate people that know what their problem is and don't try to change it. But I guess he's too late in the game to feel like I'm going to get all, you know, huggy-kissy with everybody. Tom Coughlin did it with the Giants, and it parlayed into two Super Bowls towards the end of his career. Maybe John Tortorella's got to look at it differently. Although you can make the case that he has changed. He's not as bitter as he was when he was in Tampa and the Rangers.
No,
Vancouver, that experience with Vancouver, I think, changed him and made him a better person dealing with the media. He's still salty. He's still an issue. But I think he really grew after that experience in Vancouver. And I remember having on the K-Show when he took the job in Vancouver. He was nice enough to come on. I think I was actually doing the show by myself. It was pre-Peter, and Michael was off. And I told him, be careful up there, Torts, because, you know, they're not going to take your BS. This is Vancouver, okay? This was a guy that, when he was with the Rangers, you should see the mood he'd be in Toronto, in Montreal, when there'd be 50 people at the morning skate. You could just see he just couldn't take it. And I'm like, dude, you better change, man, because that's going to be every single day in Vancouver. It's going to be living that. You know, you might get those moments on the road where you're in Columbus and you get a few people, but, you know, in Vancouver, it's going to be crazy. And I think it didn't work out in Vancouver, obviously, but if anything positive came, he just kind of softened up just a little bit. So you brought that up. I just wanted to address that. I thought he did a pretty decent job of addressing the comments about his team being soft.
Yeah, look, I mean, Torts has found his way into the almost seemingly now every post-game press conference. He's found himself on BR Open Ice or any of the NHL aggregate accounts that pick up this stuff. And because, you know, sometimes it's funny, sometimes it's a little over the top, and he says things that not every coach says. And we know in hockey, there's not a whole lot of personality, right? I mean, I think we've done a little bit better job of that. Matt Rempe is certainly a personality. I think Connor McDavid and While he's not a bubbly personality, he does talk to the media, and he does have a platform, and does, you know, he does the BetMGM commercial with Wayne Gretzky, and that's funny. But Torts is a character, no question about it. And you know, is it good for the game? Is it not good for the game? Is all up for debate. But you know, when you're able to talk about a coach in Philadelphia on any level of podcast or show around the country and in Canada, you know, he's being talked about. And I think it all comes from a good place. Like you said, I think this is just his style and how he coaches and how he handles things. Some guys really like it, and some guys that used to play for him, like Brandon Dubinsky, don't. And to be on his good side is a heck of a lot better than being on his bad side. But you know what? This is they stuck with Torts. They knew that this was going to be a process to get back to where they want to be in this division and in the conference. It's a young team. They have some veterans, but there is a lot of young talent on this team. They have possibly their goalie of the future, and it's going to be a process. But guess what? If you only miss the playoffs by a couple points here, or you make the playoffs in a year where you were kind of starting this, trying to turn the corner here and start to build this up, it would be a huge credit to Torts and a huge credit to all the guys in Philly that were able to make it happen. Danny Briere as well. A lot of bad press out of there, especially when, you know, they had the prospect that refused, Gauthier, I believe it was.
Right, yeah.
That refused to play and is now a duck, like, and you got Drysdale out of that. A lot could have gone wrong this year, and they could have just folded up once Hart was unable to play and taken their pucks and gone home. But they've hung in there, and it may not end up being a playoff team, but they're going to be close. And that has a lot to do with those players that Torts called soft and then defended and said that this is how I talk to my players, and Torts himself.
And we should also, before we get to the top five of the week, and
sure,
then obviously your interactions with the fans, is the line brawl that we saw.
There was a line brawl?
On Wednesday between the Devils and the Rangers.
Oh, that one, yeah.
Now, listen, we're talking to our people on this podcast, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time explaining to people why it happened. You know why it happened.
Yeah.
And is it good for hockey and all that? It is what it is, okay? What I want to debate with you is, did Laviolette do the right thing starting Rempe at the beginning of the game? Or could he have just said, hey, the Devils are starting McDermott, they're tempting us to put Rempe out there. You know what? I'm not going to play that game. I got 2 points to get, and I'm sure Rempe and McDermott will have their moment, but it's not going to be at the start of the game, and we're not going to play into their hands. I think the debate ends after the Rangers win the game, and I don't really think how the game went was really affected by that.
Right.
Their mistakes in the second period were not because Miller and Trouba weren't out there. They were unfortunately because Chris Kreider was out there. but honestly,
a conversation for sure.
But honestly, if I were Peter Laviolette, I probably don't play into Travis Green's hands, and I just let it play itself out. Because even though Laviolette didn't know this was going to happen, he ended up getting four of his players kicked out of the game.
Yep.
And to me, Miller and Trouba is not a fair trade with Ball and Marino.
Nope.
So why put yourself at that kind of a disadvantage? Again, I'll give him a break because he probably didn't know those guys were going to get misconduct. And it's I
he
never
know they're
going
to fight.
Well, I didn't know. Well, that and the fact is that what determines who got the game misconducts? Because there were five fights, but only four of the fights ended up getting game misconducts. Did they think that the Lazard and VC fight wasn't staged? Like, I don't know what separated that fight with the other four. I mean, they all got fighting majors, but only four of them resulted in game misconduct. So it was kind of weird. It never was really explained why, but it happened. They're going to fight at some point. I guess Peter wanted to get it over with and figure, let's just get back to hockey at this point. He had no idea that it was going to end up being a line brawl. But what would you have done if you saw that McDermott was starting in the game?
Well, it's interesting, Don, because you said don't play into their hand, and I think that's the key there, because for the entire time, and everybody knew that McDermott wanted to fight Rempe the last time they played, and that, of course, was when he got the cross-check to Siegenthaler and got him injured, and he didn't fight. And essentially, Rempe said after the game, or whenever the next time he spoke was I had my, not my orders, but like, you know, I was told what was going on here, so they didn't want to play into it then. And I don't know, maybe that was the tipping point for Laviolette and was like, all right, you're going to send them out there. You want to send a message? All right, let's just get this over with. Would I have done that? I don't know, Don. I mean, look, was it entertaining? I was at the 2012 Rangers-Devils brawl with Rupp and Prust and Bickle. when Pickle took the face off.
And DeBoer got kicked out of the game.
And DeBoer got kicked out, and Torch was yelling and screaming. I think it was the earliest I lost my voice at a game where I was a fan. Easily. So was it entertaining for fans? Absolutely. Is it what fans wanted? Absolutely. Is it good for the game? Up for debate. But you know what? We've had this conversation, Don. Hopefully this is it now. McDermott says he's gained respect back for Rempe, and Rempe says McDermott's the toughest customer he's ever faced. If Matt Rempe is in the lineup tonight, and if he plays down the stretch here for a couple games, I would like to see him be the player that he was against the Flyers, where he had the game-winning goal because he was being a nuisance in front, and he deflected the puck, and people are, I don't want to say scared of him, but really have to check themselves when they go into the corners in terms of, I know I'm going to get hit hard here, so I got to watch myself. And if he takes the pressure off of the other guys on that line, it's going to make life a lot easier for them. It's going to open up lanes for the first and second lines and the third line. But the interesting thing that you thought, Don, and I've watched this video from Molly Walker a bunch of times because she actually had the best angle of the fight, because TNT just didn't know what to do. No knock on them. I mean, what can you do?
That's all right. You can knock them. They were lost.
It was just all over the place. They were all over the place with everything. I believe. So here's the only two things I could think of. The reason that VC didn't get kicked out, and who did he fight?
I believe it was Lazar.
Lazar, right. So they took the face off, right? So, by rights, the first people that would touch the puck or were near the puck with 2 seconds into the game were the first two to fight. The other part of it, if it's not that, because I think Rempe and McDermott dropped the gloves before VC and Lazar. VC and Lazar's fight ended first. So, if you're going by order of time, and I know time is stopped with 2 seconds, the first two people in the box were VC and Lazar. Because VC and Lazar kind of got, they VC punched once, Lazar punched once, VC punched, he was kind of off balance, Lazar fell, that was it. And those two were in the box before anybody else. So I think that's why they just said, all right, you know what? There's our first fight. And then everything else after that is supplemental. I don't know when that changed, because I know for a fact that Bickle and Rupp and Prest were not kicked out of the whole game, if memory serves me correctly, in 2012. But it was certainly interesting. It gave a vibe to the game that kind of stood throughout. Got a little hairy for the Rangers there in the second. Johnny Lazarus said it was their most important regular season win since 2018. I don't know about that, but it certainly seems like the team is bonding at a level that nobody thought was possible. Well, so I guess that's good for that.
That's ultimately what you're trying to do.
And no one got hurt.
Yeah, nobody got hurt, and that's the main thing, too. So just that interesting how all of that went down on Wednesday, and we didn't get a chance to talk about it because we didn't have a podcast yesterday, but I wanted to get into it. And as far as is it good for the game and all these people that want to judge hockey from afar, I brought this up to Michael Kay yesterday on the show. What's your favorite memory of the 96 Yankees? It's Daryl Strawberry chasing after Armando Benitez in the dugout. Like, these things happen. There's a level of accountability that takes place that doesn't happen in other sports. And what ends up happening, because there isn't that level of accountability, guys get hit by 90-mile-per-hour fastballs. Basketball players get elbows in the face. This is an outlet. It's built into the culture, so that works out for hockey because it's been accepted. And like I said, it's intertwined into the history of the game where it's not other places. But competition's competition. And, you know, McNeil stands over Hoskins in that Met Philly game. Hoskins was not held to any accountability, where in hockey, McNeil and Hoskins, or somebody fights Hoskins and there's a pound of flesh. And now what ends up happening is the next game, Hoskins gets thrown at. Warnings are issued and then nobody throws at you until like 2 months later, and then somebody, God forbid, gets hit in the head. So that's no way of getting about things either. So I think hockey's kind of got it figured out. So it looks kind of ugly and weird because it's unique. But it doesn't uniqueness doesn't mean it's wrong. Okay, maybe the majority is wrong here and the minority is actually correct. Well, it's Friday, and you know what Friday means.
Don LaGreca's Friday Top 5. Number 5.
Well, even though they got smacked around by the Bruins last night, Carolina's played some really amazing hockey.
It's going to be boring.
And even though the Rangers are terrific, well, it was boring last week, maybe it'll be boring this week.
It might be.
They still have not gone away. The Carolina Hurricanes still very much alive for a chance of winning the President's Trophy. I've got them at number 5.
Yeah, to have 101 points and be fifth best on a top 5 list speaks to not only how good the league at the top is right now, but it also speaks to how much credit we give to Carolina here, because they're 5 points behind the Rangers, but the Rangers are 8-2-0 in their last 10. Carolina 7-2-1. While the Rangers have played great hockey, they're still not comfortably ahead in the Metro, so every game counts for them down the stretch here. Yeah, you know what, Don? This is going to happen, and it's not like they lost to, you know, a team like the Blue Jackets or the Sharks. They lost to a very game Bruins team that's starting to find their game, which is why they're going to be a little higher on the top five list than Carolina. But Carolina, I think, is one of the most dangerous teams that you could play in the playoffs, just because of the style that they play and the way they play. They need that top line scoring to come through for them, which has been their bugaboo in years past. But I have them at number five.
Number four.
You could even make the case of making this team higher, okay, but I have Colorado at number four. They're the best team in the Western Conference right now. They've actually surpassed Vancouver in the goal differential, plus 58 to Vancouver's plus 56, plus they've played better over the last 10, 7-2-1 to Vancouver's 5-4-1. You know all the usual suspects, and Makar can actually play better than he has, and they are just top to bottom from a forward standpoint, as dangerous as any team in the league. I got the Avalanche at number four.
Well, I have them at four, too. Maybe we do have a different top five, Don. I don't know if Colorado is the best team in the West right now. They, I think, are the second best team in the West at the moment, but I do think that they're playing better than Vancouver here. They have the most goals in the National Hockey League. You said a plus 58 goal differential. Clicking on all cylinders, they're very dangerous. If they get healthier, they're even more dangerous in a division that's very, very good. But yes, as good as they're playing, they are only four.
Number three.
I said might, so let's wait and see. But number three, I've got Boston.
Yep.
There are issues we've talked about before. No Krejci, no Bergeron. But really, their goaltending has been, you know, Swayman has been absolutely terrific for them. You know what they can do on the blue line with Carlo and with McAvoy. And they just know how to grind out wins. And you're starting to see now 7-3-0 in their last 10, three consecutive wins, that they might be clicking at the absolute right time. I've got the Boston Bruins at number three.
Complete agreement. Three-game win streak. Convincing win over a team that we have as number five in our top five. 105 points, only one behind the Rangers. They've played one more game. This is a very dangerous Bruins team. They're playing well when they need to be playing well. Number three, Boston Bruins.
Number two.
And even though the Rangers had that bit of a hiccup against Pittsburgh, still they have been amazingly consistent. 8-2-0 in their last 10, playing better 5-on-5. I know we hold them to a different standard because we see them every day, but they do have the top spot in the league with 106 points. The New York Rangers deserve to be in the top five, and they deserve to be number two. With all their flaws, they still are a team that I think deserves the number two spot.
Okay, so we do have a difference here. I have the Dallas Stars at two. Now, maybe you have them at one, Don, but that's why I was confused when you said Colorado is playing the best. Dallas is on an 8-game win streak. They're 8-2-0 in their last 10. They're only 1 point behind the Rangers for the President's Trophy. And it seems like right now, any team that they face is going to have a hard time keeping the puck out of the net, because they had a dominant performance against the Oilers, who were in playoff form, losing 5-0. With everybody scoring for them, all the usual suspects, and to get goal scoring from top to bottom for this team that doesn't have double-digit losses on the road this year, 5 overtime losses, but only 9 regulation losses, only 10 losses at home in regulation. One of the best teams in hockey, the best team in the West right now, they're number two for me. So who do you have?
Number one.
Yeah. You know, I'm trying to throw you off the scent a little, but Dallas, clearly
I was so
number
confused.
One. Plus 61 goal differential. They've won 8 consecutive games. Now, I do think Colorado is a better team up and down.
Okay, that's fair.
Dallas has been a little inconsistent. Ottinger's been inconsistent as well. Probably could play a lot better, but they are right now on fire. And what they did to Edmonton the other night, we were, you know, joking about McDavid and all the points. You know, to shut out the Edmonton Oilers the way the Dallas Stars did, you know, it was pretty impressive to me. And they've actually got a better record on the road than they do at home. But still, they see the value in having to avoid playing Winnipeg and Colorado in the first round and be able to go after one of the wild card teams. It could be a team that ends up winning the President's Trophy when it's all said and done, although the Rangers do have the tiebreaker and have a 1-point lead on Dallas. I think for all the reasons that you said, too, I've got the Dallas Stars in one.
I'm just going to stick with the Rangers. Okay. Not trying to be a homer. but they do have the most points. Dallas is playing unbelievable. I could have easily put them at number one, but if the Rangers lost that game against the Devils, they'd easily be number two, but they didn't. They're 8-2-0 in their last 10. They have 106 points. Top to bottom, playing very well at the present moment. Every single one of these teams, as we've said over the last month and a half, have flaws. The Rangers are certainly one of those teams. They need to be better 5-on-5, particularly their top line, or whatever what people consider their top line with Kreider and Zibanejad. But at the moment, for now, because they are the President's Trophy leaders, and there's only 6 games left to go for most teams, I have the Rangers at number one.
All right, let's go to your social media, at Don LaGreca, at Anthony Pusick, hashtag Game Misconduct. On Wednesday, during the Rangers-Devils game, I just threw up a poll, because we had talked about it earlier in the day, about what playoff format would you want to see going forward, and we got like almost 1,000 votes, so thanks to the people that participated. The poll was, what playoff format would you like to see? It was one play eight in conference, 1 play 16, keep it as it is, and I'm not surprised. I lost, but the right one moving forward did, and that's going back to the old 1-8 format in conference. 69% of voters wanted that. 17% said keep it as it is, and 1-16 got 14% of the vote. And I think the reason why people were discouraged by 1-16 is because of what I said, and that's travel. Even though this year only Boston would be affected by the travel, because Boston would play the Kings when we did it, people seem to think the 1-8 is the best and the fairest format, and I can live with that. So thanks for everybody voting for that. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, no, listen, Don, like, that's why I said, look, and it could happen, and as we've seen, sometimes the NHL does things that the fans don't like, but the NHL does what it wants, like every major sport and every major league. 1-16 could be cool, but I think that they do want to keep, I think there's something about keeping the conferences together. Now, could it go back to 1-8 at some point? I think we might get back there. I think that the sport has reached a place where we don't have to try and work too hard to get rivalries in the first round for people to watch. As you've said, Don, it's a regional sport, and own it. I don't know if having a more interesting first-round matchup is going to get the casual hockey fan to stay up till 10 o'clock at night to watch a game in Colorado, watch a game right in Vegas. But if Connor McDavid's playing, I don't think it matters who he's playing. I think real hockey fans, or true hockey fans that are fans of the sport more than just their local team, will want to watch Connor McDavid play. So I think that once we get to the point of focusing on the stars, kind of similar to what the NBA does, I don't think it's going to matter if you have that bracket system or if you go 1-8 and you live with it that way. And I appreciate everybody that listens to the podcast kind of chiming in on social media. I think too much change isn't good. And I think that I like the conferences now as it is. If things change and we get more expansions and this, that, and the other, get back to me. But yeah, I'm kind of okay with what everybody's saying about it right now.
All right, Sam Diaz says, my playoff lineup for the Rangers would be, so he'd keep the forward lines, I guess, pretty much the same, looking at it from that way.
Although I don't know if I would.
He would have, well, here's what he has. He's got Zibanejad between Kreider and Roslovic, so that's the same. You keep the second rotation the same. He's got Wennberg between VC and Kako, and he's got Gaudreau, Cooley, and Rempe. But the big thing is he's got Trouba and Jones as the third pairing. I said I would go with Jones over Gustafson. Would you drop Trouba to the third pairing? I would consider it. I know he's the captain. He's still going to get 18-plus minutes in the game. He still is going to have an impact. But I really was impressed with Miller and Schneider playing together when Trouba was out. I'm not mad at what Sam Diaz has up there.
No, I'm not mad at what he has. Because the thing that I have mad is that there are people that think that Jacob Trouba won't play in the playoffs, and that's just not going to happen. I think that, look, sometimes injuries, we see it, you know, Wally Pipp is always the example, but sometimes injuries show you the possibilities that happen when somebody's not there, right? And even when Lindgren was out, even Ruedel played okay. I'm not saying that Ruedel's going to play major minutes in the playoffs, but it's nice to know that you have 7 or 8 defensemen deep that you can go to. And what's frustrating for Jacob Trouba is that he didn't really have a chance to rebound from that game that he had against Pittsburgh because he got bounced 2 seconds into the game against the Devils. Let's see how he plays tonight against a Red Wing team that needs the game. Does he clean things up? Do him and Miller jive a little better than they have the first two games since he's been back? If they don't, Laviolette knows he can go to a Miller-Schneider combo, and Jacob Trouba is still a very good defenseman. And having him with Jones, whereas Trouba's a little bit more of the stay-home guy, and Jones kind of, he likes to jump into the play. He's very offensive-minded. I think that that's not necessarily a bad pairing, and you could always use Trouba on the PK if you want to, and you could use him on the power play, and that'll allow him to play those extra minutes on special teams. Here's what I might do. I don't know. I think maybe move Kako back to the Kreider Zibanejad line. And that's not a knock on Roslovic. I think that what Roslovic's skill set is his speed, and he hasn't been able to showcase it with this Kreider Zibanejad line that hasn't gotten going. Kako's played with that line. They've had success in the past. They haven't had success recently. Quite frankly, this year they haven't had success. Nobody has. But do you hate the idea of a Cooley, Wennberg, Roslovic third line that's kind of got a little bit of speed and almost like a half-checking line? Does that excite you? Is that something that you think that would work in the playoffs? And then the other thing I would say, and I wouldn't put Rempe in pen. I think Rempe's going to be in pencil. And the reason I say that is it depends on the matchup, right? If you need a heavy body, you're going with Rempe. If you need speed, you're going with Brodzinski. And that seems like the way that Laviolette's been going recently. Sometimes Cooley's the odd man out. But those would be the things I'd keep Rempe in pencil, not pen, and I might swap Roslovic and Kako.
All right. Tommy P. says, in your opinion, who are the premier shutdown defensemen in the league? When do they get their own award? I'd love to be able to see, you know, the Norris go to the best offensive defenseman and come up with, I don't know what name you would use,
Nick
the
Litch.
Best defensive defenseman. Mm-hmm.
We had this conversation, right? Didn't we give some names? Did we say Nick Lidstrom?
Lindstrom might be a guy that you'd give it to, like a really good shutdown guy. Although Lindstrom was a great offensive player,
I know he was.
You know, but you go by plus minus, right? You know, like Quinn Hughes is going to win the Norris, I would think, is a plus 38. But you got a Forsling is a plus 48 for Florida. Like he's outstanding. Hronek is also a really good shutdown defenseman too. It's not sexy, but because they're kind of like offensive linemen. If they do their job, you don't notice it quite as much. But those are the guys you kind of think of, guys that are really good plus-minus guys that don't score a lot. Ekholm is another guy, I think, that doesn't get a lot of consideration, too.
The two guys on Carolina.
They're great
Slavin,
as well.
Slavin, Pesci.
Yeah, so there's a lot of guys. It's not overly sexy, and I don't want to be lazy and just leave it to plus minus, but there's not a lot of stats other than plus minus that can really define how good a shutdown guy you are. But you just look by how many minutes they play, who's on the ice in key spots. But it does seem like the Norris Trophy is more geared towards offense than overall defense. And plus, you know, like a Quinn Hughes, you know, he's on a really good team that scores a lot. So that might mask some deficiencies he might have defensively because he's on the ice a lot for when they score. But then you've got to get down to, all right, how often is he on the ice when the other team scores? You'd have to really get down to a fine-tooth comb with that. I think Hughes is going to win the Norris. But is he the best defenseman in the league as far as defensively? Probably not. But those are just some of the names that I was going to throw out. I don't know if there's anybody off the top of your head that you would think about.
No, I think you nailed it. Like I said, if we're talking about shutdown defensemen for Tommy P at the present moment, I would say the two Carolina guys, again, Carolina not as respected around the league, or at least just doesn't get the credit that they deserve for how good they are. And every time you see Slavin and Pesci, they pretty much shut down anybody that they come across. But again, this changes rapidly, right, Don? Like 2 years ago, you would have thought Pulak and Pelech would be a shutdown pair for the Islanders for years to come. And they've had some injury struggles, and they haven't been as strong as they have been in years past. It rapidly changes. I think Tommy P, unless I read it wrong, I think he said, like, you know, over the last 10 years. I know he was at the back end of his career, but I always like watching Nick Cronwall play just because of the way how hard he played and how much he, and his checking ability. And that's always underrated for a defenseman, especially if you can lay the boomstick kind of like Trouba. I think you nailed it. And in terms of the Norris, look, will we ever reach a point where it's not going to be the offensive defenseman award that has kind of become? I think we will, because I think there are guys that are, look, Quinn Hughes is a good offensive player. He's a good defenseman, too. He's a good offensive defenseman, but he's good defensively. It's not like he sacrifices his ability on offense for defense. People think that's Erik Karlsson. Remember, when Erik Karlsson was running Norris's in Ottawa, he was one of the best defensemen in the game. Forget just because he was able to score. He was a great defenseman. And it's not that he's not a great defenseman anymore. He's just a little slower and older. Right. And his offense has kind of taken over in the sense of, I'm going to be a third-pair defenseman here, sometimes second-pair depending, but I'm going to be offensively more helpful than I am defensively. So, yeah, look, I think that we've kind of gotten too offensive with the Norris, offensively offensive. But I think that the pendulum will swing again, and there'll be a guy like a Fox or a Hughes that do it. And even though they are good offensively, you really give them credit for how good they are defensively as well.
DeZam says, do we put too much stock into playing well before the season ends, heading into the postseason, and vice versa for resting guys to be as healthy for the playoffs? Where do you think that happy medium is? And where, when could you see the Rangers do that in the midst of a President's Trophy run? Well, again, it's not like basketball and baseball. You don't have a lot of spare parts, right? So you look at the Rangers, like, who are they going to rest? Well, who are you resting? You got, what, one extra forward and two extra defensemen. So there's not a lot of rest to go around. Now, that doesn't, you can distribute the minutes differently, but if you decide, okay, I'm going to give Rempe a rest and Brodzinski goes in, or whoever ends up filling in, you only have the one spare forward. You're not calling guys up from the minor league. That's just not happening. And then just how much you're going to play Igor compared to Quick. So where you would see it, I think, is that last game of the season. If everything is locked up, the Rangers don't need it. Obviously, Ottawa's not going to need it. You might see different lines and different allotting of minutes. Otherwise, I don't think you're going to see much of a difference. And I do think playing well going into the postseason is important. Playing well doesn't always mean that wins and losses, because
it's the way it looks.
Well, because that game against the Devils isn't exactly, to me, playing well.
No.
It was a disgusting second period. Yeah, you won the game, but there were glaring deficiencies you would not want to see happen in a playoff series against a really good hockey team. You probably lose that game if you're playing Tampa in the first round and you have a second period like that. Yeah, that might cost you a game and eventually cost you a series. You want to be playing well and everybody be healthy, maybe more important than that, but just getting rid of the bad habits and just having everybody on the same page may not always mean a W at the end of the day, but just cutting down on the bad habits. So Wednesday would be an example of, yeah, you won the game, but that's not the way you want to play in these final six.
No, and I think it does matter in hockey, Don, and you said it, because it depends on how it looks, right? If you're playing bad and your lines aren't clicking and your breakout passes aren't crisp and your defense isn't covering the way that they would need to against the best opponents in the league, it's going to show up in a seven-game series. And while sometimes there's days off, there's not a whole lot of practice time to fix things. And if you're going to start tinkering with lines or trying things that you haven't normally done in the regular season during the playoffs, you don't know how that's going to look. That's why Laviolette has played so much, in Laviolette's case specifically, placed so much emphasis on, we're going to stick with the lines that got us here, and we're going to stick with the players that got us here. Because while there's been dips and peaks and valleys, as he's called it, they have 106 points. They're very close to the franchise record in points and wins. So, you know, as broken as we think they have been in sometimes, and all these teams, you know, Dallas doesn't really move their lines around all that much. They called up Stankoven, and he's been unbelievable as a rookie. But look, and Boston tinkers here and there, and Vancouver, but you take a look and you almost can guarantee who you're going to see on the top line and the second line for these teams. And it's all a matter of playing well at the right time. Now, a team could go on a 3-game losing streak heading into the playoffs and then rattle off a sweep of a team. We don't know. But it certainly, if you're a fan, feel a heck of a lot better if you're playing well going into the playoffs than if you're struggling going into the playoffs.
Exactly. Let's close it out with Sean, who says, whilst I enjoyed your 1-16 argument last pod, the schedule revamp is just too unreasonable. Bring back 1-8. Sometimes divisions and conferences are stronger. It ebbs and flows. Them's the breaks. Don't be the 16th best team. Be better. Yeah, 1-16, again, it was just a pipe dream for me. I just
you did a good job with it, though.
But thank you. I just look at it as, yeah, you're not really as heavily weighed as you used to be. All right, you play half of your division 4 times, the other half 3. You play the other division 3 times. you play the other conference twice. It's not really that big of a discrepancy. It's not like baseball where you play an overwhelming majority of your games in your division and in your league, and then there's a distinct drop-off with the other league. Right? Same in football. You know, football, you play a heavy in division. You don't play everybody in your conference, but you only play one division in the other conference. But, you know, when the reason I was kind of favoring 1 through 16 is, you know, the Rangers only play one more game against the Penguins than they did against the Vancouver Canucks.
Right.
Think about that.
Yeah, no,
you
I know.
So it's kind of balanced to where I thought it would be fair to just say, all right, these are the 16 best teams in the NHL, go after it. You know, and if you want to make sure the top four teams are all division winners so you can at least honor wanting to win your division, then I can understand that. So maybe the two seed or the five or six seed may have more points than the two seed, but at least you're a little bit more in line. That's why I talk about it. We make it seem like, oh, East and West. What's the difference? Like I said, the Rangers played the Penguins three times this year. They played the Canucks twice. You know, so it doesn't make, I really don't think there's that
big
of a difference.
Well, this is why it's not so crazy, right, Don? Because if they don't worry about, and I know it's the regular season, and then you go out on a trip, so it's not long flights back and forth because you probably stay out on the West Coast or the East Coast, depending on what team you are, for a couple of days or a week. You seem to not worry about the fact that you have to travel during the season. In series, it's much harder, and there has to be more travel and things of that nature, but when you think about it, it's not crazy. If you want to put an emphasis on the fact that you want to see teams in every building every year, why is it crazy to think that a West team can't play an East team in the playoffs before the Stanley Cup? Well, it's crazy because it's never been done before. Oh, right. Yes, it did. During the lockout. Not the lockout. During the COVID pandemic when we had the Canadians play the Lightning for a quote-unquote Stanley Cup.
Right.
Correct? So,
yeah.
You know, it's not like it's out of the ordinary. And no, I don't know how many people complained at the time. I think everybody was just happy to have hockey back. But just to come up with the idea and say that you did it, Don, I give you credit.
And you could tell me that the travel's unfair. Travel could be unfair in the West as well. You know, what if you ever got a first-round matchup, which you could still see, of Nashville versus Vancouver?
Well, look, my thoughts on Nashville in the West are, you know.
Well, but unfortunately, that's the case. It's like when Detroit was in the West all those years. So that's a significant amount of travel. And then you can have a year where, you know, Minnesota's playing Winnipeg, and it's very close. And then the winner of each series moves on, and you could say, well, there is a distinct advantage for the Minnesota-Winnipeg winner because they didn't have to travel as much as the Vancouver-Nashville winner. You know, so, and somebody misunderstood when I joked, I said that all those cups that Detroit won when they were in the West and they haven't in the East. I'm not suggesting they haven't won in the East because they haven't had to travel as much. It's just that the dynasty was over in correlation with
the
moving
to the
East.
Yeah, it just happened to all happen all at once there.
I'm just saying that, you know, they were able to overcome it, but they were a really good team. There were plenty of times, you know, the Red Wings were playing the Ducks in the first round of the playoffs, and, you know, that didn't seem to be fair. Just the way it breaks down. It's not fair that Nashville's got to be out there. It wasn't fair when Columbus was a Western Conference team, if you remember when they first came into the league. I think if there's any chance of a change in format, it's going to be going back to 1 through 8 more so than it's going to be ever going back to 1 through 16.
One quick thought, Don, before we get out of Dodge, okay? And I know I'm sure you saw this on Twitter. Arizona, they showed their plans for what they want to build on this 110-acre land in Arizona, this giant complex. It won't just be the arena. There's going to be stores around it, and it's going to be a bustling metropolis in the desert where everybody's going to be able to go, and in the offseason, you could have stores that are open, and then you have the big arena that Arizona fans deserve and the Coyotes deserve, and they're really, really trying on a day where we found out that the A's are going to move to Sacramento and say, forget our fans. A, do you think this happens? B, what do you think of the effort that's being put in to try and keep the Coyotes in Arizona?
Listen, I think that the NHL put themselves in a situation years ago where they kept doubling and tripling and quadrupling down to now they just don't want to let it go. Like, they put so much time and effort into keeping them in Arizona, and I think they want to be in there because if you remember, we had EJ Raddick on, maybe you were off that day, where he said that there's a distinct possibility that if Arizona were to move to Utah or Houston, if they ever did open up expansion again, they may still open it up to Arizona because they want to be there because it is a thriving market. It's just, it sucks. They just have not been able to figure out where to put an arena. And it just doesn't work in Tempe. It works for the Cardinals because there's games only once a week. But you know, when you have, we could have three games in a week to ask people from Phoenix and from Scottsdale to travel to Tempe. It was just too much. So they're trying to make it work. They really want to be in Arizona. So they've gone this far with it. I would have tapped out a long time ago. It's embarrassing that they're playing a 5,500 seat arena. You're never going to be able to build any kind of fan base. You're not going to be able to build anybody, you know, coming there in free agency. I'm sure everybody that's got a no trade clause has Arizona on it because they don't know what the future is there. So I would have cut bait, especially if Utah and Houston are hot and you wouldn't have to realign. But I guess they look at it, Anthony, and just say, we've been in this for so long. Let's just try to see it through. So I hope this arena does happen, but why do I feel like they're gonna rob Peter to pay Paul for another 2-3 years, hoping it works, and then eventually move anyway? And you get to say to yourself, "Boy, look at all the time we wasted for a market that just isn't working."
Yeah, I think that's the fear. Yeah, and look, I know I ask a real quick question that takes like 8 hours to answer, but I just thought it was interesting.
No,
I give them credit. On a day where I know this is a hockey podcast, but on a day where we saw a baseball team just basically punt on their fans and on the city that they've called home, I do give the Arizona ownership credit for just trying. And then apparently this is going to have no tax money in it from people in Arizona, which of course is a big contention. It's all going to be private funded and all that, which is a great thing to try and do. I kind of just hope, for their sake, I hope it works. I hope it works out, and I hope they stay. And then when we do expand, or if we do expand in the National Hockey League, it's to places like Utah and Houston and other places that really want a team.
Yeah.
So that it's not once again relocating a team because they can't cut it where they are.
All right, so join us on Monday. We'll have EJ back. It'll be the final week of the regular season, so that should be interesting to be able to break it all down. Want to get in touch with us over the weekend at Don LaGreca, at Anthony Pusick. Make sure you put the hashtag Game Misconduct. I'll be on the pre and post tonight and Sunday for Rangers Red Wings, Rangers Canadians. Have a great weekend, buddy.
Be safe, everybody.
We'll talk to you again on Monday. This was the Friday edition of Game Misconduct.
This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.